what is actually happening. It's not actually so easy. The processes of our bodies and minds, our habits, our conditioning, all kind of run counter to that kind of connection with experience. What is actually happening? Sometimes it's said the Buddha's teachings go against the stream. And I think that means against the stream of our human tendencies towards misperceiving experience, misunderstanding experience, go against the stream of our habits and our conditioning, against the stream of greed, aversion, and delusion. And so the Buddha's teachings are pointing to helping us understand how do we recognize things as they are actually happening. What is actually happening? One teaching in the suttas, the Buddha encounters a practitioner who hasn't met him before. Many of you are familiar with this story. This is the story of Bahiya. And Bahiya had been practicing and thought he was actually enlightened. And he got a visitation in his mind. He got a visitation from a relative who said, "You know, you're all messed up here. You're not enlightened. And in fact, you're not even on the path that leads to enlightenment." And it's said that Bahiya had a conversation with his departed relative and said, "Well, is there anyone who knows what the way is?" And his relative pointed him to the Buddha. And so Bahiya set off to find the Buddha. When he got there, he had been traveling probably for some days. And he got to the place where the monks were practicing, and the Buddha wasn't there. So he asked where he could find him, and they said, "Well, you know, it's not a great time to go find the Buddha because he's on alms round." But they told him where he was, and so Bahiya went to the place where the Buddha was on alms round and found him and said, "I've been traveling a long way. Will you please teach me the Dharma? Teach me what you know. Teach me so that I can understand." And the Buddha responded, "This isn't a good time. I'm on my alms round." But he asked a second time. The Buddha responded the same. And the third time, and apparently this is like a magic thing, if you ask three times, In most cases, there's an exception in the suttas when somebody asks three times, the Buddha grants the request, but there is an exception to that. And so the Buddha stopped and faced Bahiya and gave him a teaching. It was a brief teaching, possibly a brief teaching because the Buddha was on alms round. He was on his way to lunch. And, you know, the vows that the monastics take is they need to finish eating by a certain time of day. So he gave them this teaching in brief. He gave him this teaching in brief. And also possibly the Buddha was said to have a deep understanding when he met someone of what they were capable of understanding and what the teachings would be that would be really useful for them. And so that's also possibly how he decided to offer this teaching. And so it's a description in brief of what the Buddha taught. So here's what he said to Bahiya. And many of you are familiar with this, but I don't think you can hear this enough. Bahiya, you should train yourself thus. In reference to the seen, there will be only the seen. In reference to the heard, there will be only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, only the cognized. That is how you should train yourself. When for you, there will be only the seen in reference to the seen, only the heard in reference to the heard, only the sensed in reference to the sensed, only the cognized in reference to the cognized, then, Bahiya, there is no you in terms of that. When there is no you in terms of that, there is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of suffering. And so we have in this a teaching that describes what the practice is and what the result of the practice is. The practice is described in that very first paragraph. In the seen is only the seen. You should train yourself in reference to the seen. There will be only the seen. In reference to the heard, there will be only the heard. In reference to the sensed, there will be only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, there will be only the cognized. That's the training that he offered to Bahiya. The rest of the teaching describes when that is what you... How experience is being met. When that is how the mind is receiving experience, the mind does not relate to it in terms of self. There is no sense of self happening, and this is freedom. So the work is in that first part. And this being a very concise and brief teaching, there's not a lot of information here about how you go about doing this. What does it mean? In reference to the seen, there will be only the seen. Bahiya apparently understood this. And so this is one of those things that, you know, in the teaching, Bahiya is fully awakened through hearing this teaching. So he was at a place in his own practice, in his own ability to know what was going on, that he apparently just needed a turning of view in order to be able to see this. And so Bahiya understood it. So the Buddha did not have to elaborate to Bahiya, but he spent many texts elaborating on what this means in different ways for different people at different times, different kinds of teachings. So all of the teachings kind of help us to come to the place where we can know experience in this way. So first, just a little comment about these four words. In the seen is only the seen, the heard, the sensed, and the cognized. These refer to the processes of our sense bases. The teachings say that this is a shorthand for the six sense bases. Seen refers to the sense base of sight. Heard refers to the sense base of sound. Sensed refers to the sense bases of touch, smell, and taste. And cognized refers to the sense base of the mind. So it's kind of a shorthand for the receiving sense contact. In the receiving of sense contact, it's just sense contact. Maybe we could point back to that understanding or that kind of wisdom I pointed to that first day. An object is just an object. And the seen is only the seen, just sight, just sound, just smell, just taste, just touch, just something arising in the mind. A thought is just a thought. I want to distinguish here between, there was a question actually about this after the talk yesterday on mental formations. Somebody asked the question, are mental formations what is referred to in the Bihiya Sutta when it says cognized? And the cognized is only the cognized. And I would say that the mental formations are a subset of what it means when he's referring to cognized. The cognized is larger than mental formations. Cognized includes all of the mental activities, and the teaching of the aggregates had four mental activities, the mental formations one of them, the other three being consciousness, feeling, and perception. So recognizing here the awareness of in the cognized is only the cognized is not just pointing to knowing a thought as a thought, but it's also recognizing the process of perception as the process of perception, the process of knowing as the process of knowing, the process of feeling as the process of feeling. So even just the language, in the seen will be only the seen, there may be a little bit of a sense of just this, taking in just this, seeing is happening, perceiving is happening, thinking is happening, smelling is happening, tasting is happening. Reactivity is happening. That would be noticing the arising of, or noticing frustration arising. That would be, oh, frustration is arising. That is, it's as simple as that. And the cognized is only the cognized. It's just frustration arising. It's just an arising. And this is kind of how we are encouraging ourselves to be present here, just what's here, what is already happening, what's arising. But we have very strong habits. All of us have strong tendencies towards being involved with our experiences, with our sense impressions, whether those are physical sense impressions or mental sense impressions. It doesn't usually simply happen that frustration arises and we recognize, oh yeah, that's frustration. We usually get involved with it and think we need to do something or figure out how to get rid of the thing we're frustrated about or fix it or... So we're not usually simply, oh yeah, and the seen is only the seen and the cognized is only the cognized. That's not usually our relationship to experience. There's another teaching that also many of you are familiar with. I love pulling these teachings together into kind of a teaching on their own. And that's the Honeyball Sutta, which a couple of paragraphs in that sutta, the Honeyball Sutta, Majjhima 18, describe our usual relationship to sense experience. And I've mentioned this several times in ways. I've not through using the language of the Honeyball Sutta, but I've talked about this process that the Buddha describes. Actually, Mahakachana describes this, and the Buddha says, yes, I would have said it just like that. So this teaching is offered by one of the Buddha's senior monks. So he describes in this teaching what our usual relationship to sense experience is. And he starts where we start, usually, where we think we're starting with sense impression. He says, dependent on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. Now there's the eye. This is one of the sense bases. He goes through this teaching with respect to all six sense bases, but we'll just go through it with the eye right now. So dependent on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of those three is contact. The eye, the forms, eye consciousness, there's contact with that sense base. That seeing right there, that's the seeing. That's what the Buddha referred to in his teaching to Bahia. That's the seeing. The seeing is constructed. That's a piece here that Mahakachana is elaborating on. When our eyes are closed, when our attention is not directed, sometimes it's quite amazing. When we see the attention can focus on a particular sense base to the exclusion of other sense bases. I noticed this really clearly one time when I was talking to my mom on the phone. I was trying to multitask, thinking I could listen to my mom and do this thing on the computer at the same time. And I realized at some point that when I was doing that thing on the computer, it's like my ear door closed. I did not hear my mom. And so it's like, okay, put that down. This does not work. So there can be the, so that when I was focused on the computer, there was nothing, no contact at the sense door. Ear consciousness was not arising. The mind was so focused on the other sense door, the mind and the eye door. The eye door and the mind door was where the attention was focused. So that that contact, that's the seen, that's the heard, that's the sense, that's the cognized. When there is the eye and forms and the eye consciousness, the meeting of the three is contact, that's the seen, the heard, the sense, the cognized. With contact as condition, the Mahakachana goes on, with contact as condition, there is feeling. What one feels, that one perceives. And so here we're tying together the teachings of the sense bases with the teachings of the aggregates. Talked about the aggregates a little bit the last couple of days. And so here Mahakachana is kind of showing how with a particular sense base, the aggregates come into play. So with the eye and sight feeling, the aggregate of feeling, with that feeling, the aggregate of perception. So there's the sight, there's pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and there's the recognition of what that sight is. That happens pretty quickly together. And then Mahakachana goes on. This part is not, there's no particular problem so far at this point. This is just kind of the way the human system works. The problem comes in, the way that we tend to relate to feeling and perception is that it is mine, me, who I am. And the language in this, what one feels, that one perceives, is kind of implying there that there's already crept in that sense of me perceiving. So there's already a little bit of distortion in the perception here. And that's the way our perception works. We do not have a pure perception. It is not simply, those of us who are not enlightened, who do not understand perception as perception, feeling as feeling, knowing as knowing, we tend to identify with it. It's mine. It's who I am. And so with that kind of distortion, the next thing that happens is that what one perceives, that one thinks about. So mental formations enter here. And again, these mental formations can be wholesome or unwholesome. You know, there can be wholesome thinking that arises in dependence on sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. That's kind of what we are hoping to cultivate here, the wholesome relationships. And they are still relationships. They are still possibly the times, like I mentioned this morning, the effort, the personal effort that we make, that personal effort based on the distortion of self, but the practice, we can't just say, well, there's a sense of self here, so I'm not going to practice. We'd never get anywhere. And in fact, there is another teaching that I love so much, another sutta in which Ananda is talking to a nun, and he says, in that, I won't go through that teaching in the whole, just a couple of pieces of it. He says, craving can be overcome by craving. And conceit, or the sense of self, can be overcome by conceit. So there are ways that craving can be directed towards freedom from craving, and ways that identification and conceiving can be directed towards release of that. And so we can't, you know, when we see a sense of self arising, you know, it's going to be happening for a long time. So let's encourage the movement towards understanding them. Understanding those patterns, those habits of mind. So with perception, one starts thinking. We start, you know, and it can be fairly minimal or simple at first. It might be, you know, there's a sight. We see a squirrel, and then we start there's the perception. There's the squirrel perception, which is a form of a thought. But then there's also potentially, oh, which squirrel is that? You know, I've got this family of squirrels back there and I'm getting to know the individual squirrels. And so there's a little bit of that, you know, which squirrel is that? Kind of. So it's you know, fairly innocent, that kind of thinking. And those kinds of thinking can be, you know, directed towards the practice. The next piece is where it really gets complicated. What one thinks about, that one mentally proliferates. That one complicates another translation. That one complicates. This is where we start to get really involved. This is where we pick it up and start to chew on it and run with it. And there's one translation of this, the term here, this mental proliferation, the term that it's translating is papancha. And papancha often, at least historically in this tradition or in the tradition that I grew up with, the at IMS, at Spirit Rock, often when they talked about papancha, they talked about it as thinking run amok. You know, the mind just kind of proliferating with thoughts. And that is one way that papancha does seem to manifest, that we just go down the rabbit hole of thinking. We lose touch with being aware. It's a form of delusion. We've lost touch. The next piece of the Honeyball Sutta teaching that Mahakachana brings in. So yeah, the mind runs amok, and we kind of lose touch with experience at that point. There's the kind of the mind just proliferating, complicating. But what Mahakachana says is that complication, that mental proliferation, is then applied to our future perceptions and ideas. The language is, with what one has mentally proliferated as the source, perceptions and notions born of mental proliferation beset one with respect to past, future, and present forms cognizable through the eye. So essentially, you know, we started this whole thing with the eye thinking, oh yeah, you know, just the eye receiving sight. But here it's pointing to the eye doesn't just receive sight. It's receiving sight through the complication, prior complications. And I mentioned that to some extent the other day, that the filters, the views, the opinions that we have shape what we see, shape what we hear, shape what we feel. So our past, essentially, the conditioning of our past, thoughts, views, ideas, beliefs, opinions, come into the present moment through how we relate to our sense perception, through how and how we even take in sense perception. Whether those sense perceptions are seen as friendly or threatening. So our past comes into our presence, through the way our minds work. And this is habitual. This, I love that this is described in the suttas, because, you know, it's like Mahakachana is describing what happens to all human beings. It's amazing that it is so clearly described here. We all have our particular flavors, our particular ways, our particular, you know, things that have been conditioned. But this description of how we relate to sense experience, think about it, believe it, and relate to further experience based on those views and ideas and beliefs, that's the nature of our human experience when we are not aware of, in the cognized is only the cognized. So another way to understand papancha, and I got this kind of understanding through a couple of different reflections and sources and study through with different teachers, different books, different readings. And the two main ones I want to give kind of credit to are Jnanananda in two books, Concept and Reality in Early Buddhist Thought, and The Magic of the Mind, both of which, if you like books that dive into the suttas and talk about them, you'll enjoy them. They're fairly detailed and technical. But anyway, they're really very clear teachings on some of these things that I'm talking about today. And the other is Thanissaro Bhikkhu, his descriptions about papancha and his understanding of his uses of translation. He used the word objectification and what as one way of translating papancha. Conceptualization is another translation of papancha. Now these activities of mind, objectification, conceptualization, these can go on absent conscious thought. Really, this is the kind of the way the process of. The other day I talked about, you know, in this, you know, an object is not a thing. And I said, what our mind does is it, like, in that process of experiencing some sight or sound or smell, our mind kind of draws a circle around it and says, that's a thing. That thing making, objectification, objective, making an object out of. We could say another way to translate that. Papancha could be making an object of. That's another way to understand what's happening there at that moment. And that's a very subtle thing that happens in our human mind. The mind can be really quiet and it can still be believing the objects as objects, as having some kind of inherent reality. So this definition of papancha really kind of points to it as the engine of delusion in my understanding. This process of, like, landing on experience and saying, yep, that's a thing. And in that process of landing on that experience, that's a thing, simultaneously sense of self. So this process of papancha is one way to understand it, is just this, the function of delusion, what delusion is doing. And in a humbling realization, awareness isn't enough. You know, we can be aware and still have this process of objectifying happening. Because it happens at very deep levels. And so this is some of what our practice actually helps us to see. This thing-making, this I-making, Maybe it sometimes feels like we're making an other or a thing. Sometimes it feels like we're making an I. But when we see that process at work, and I'm hearing more of the interest in that in the practice meetings, which is delightful. Instead of judging ourselves for the fact that a sense of self comes up, it's like, oh, there's a sense of self, or the fact that the mind has created a thing out of something. It's like, well, that's what the mind has done. Let's just see what's going on. That's our work. We don't put a stop to this process of thing-making or I-making by just deciding, yeah, I think I'll stop doing that. I mean, that already has an I in it. You know, I'll stop doing that. By definition, that's not how the unwinding happens. The unwinding happens by being curious about what is happening with the contact of a sense, understanding this process. So if we return to the Bahia Sutta, oh, wait, I've got a quote here that's fun to share before I go there. This is from Professor Palihawadana. And he says, he's a scholar. He says, this process of distorted perception, which is essentially papancha distorts perception. It takes things to be permanent. It takes things to be reliable. It takes things to be self. This process of distorted perception. So, you know, the perception itself, the perception that we are believing right in the perception that there is a thing there. This process of distorted perception, of placing every bare perception into a framework of emotions and beliefs that have come out of our past, our history, our conditioning, robs the freshness of our experience. But we are not aware of this constant interference. Because of this unawareness, which is our ignorance or our delusion, we see humanity fragmented as me and others, us as and them, into various other stereotypes, skin color, ethnicity, language, ideology included. This process is responsible for so much suffering, not only in our own human experience, but in culture, in the world, in our relationships with each other. Our whole culture is built on papancha. Oh gosh. Our whole culture is built on this. No wonder it's such a mess out there. So back to the Bahia Sutta, what might be a way through this? So the Bahia Sutta points to looking at the individual sense doors. And the seen is only the seen, and the heard is only the heard, and the sensed is only the sensed, and the cognized is only the cognized. But as there is the sense perception, you're already getting the cognized. And so as the sense perception arises, bringing this back to Bahia Sutta. I mean, bringing this back to the Honeyball Sutta. Based on the eye informs, eye consciousness arises. In the seen is only the seen understands. The seen is a conditioned phenomenon that includes consciousness, includes the arising of consciousness with this meeting of the eye informs. So understanding in the seen is only the seen understands there's knowing happening. And then feeling arises and understands that feeling is arising in dependence on contact. Now, it doesn't have to be this like precise moment to moment understanding. At times it can be. And it's quite stunning when the mind can see that. But as I described yesterday, this kind of like moment to moment clear seeing, like this process unfolding, what Mahakachana describes unfolding, insight and understanding happen in different ways. And this is not the only way that insight and understanding happens. I think in the seen is only the seen and the heard is only the heard can also be a pretty simple understanding. Just an understanding. There's sight and there's all kinds of stuff going on in the mind with it. And seeing, you know, even just, wow, this is conditioned. Understanding that can be very freeing. Just understanding that. But the other piece about it is to recognize, you know, we're not going to be able to, this tendency to, you know, go into this sticky mass of papancha. What is possible and what might begin to break through that process naturally kind of doing its thing with reinforcing itself, when the mind can recognize and see perception is happening, thinking is happening, proliferation or thing making is happening, or craving is happening. Then at that point, the cognized is being recognized as cognized. Just an object arising. Taking, in effect, taking the believing out of those processes. Sometimes I think of papancha as being the believing engine. The mind creates a perception, recognizes a sight, a sound as a something. And then the papancha is kind of like the, yeah, I believe that's a thing. It's kind of the believing engine. Just one way of thinking about it. And so recognizing believing is happening. Believing this is a problem is happening. That shift, that's, I think, the shift the Buddha was pointing to Bahia. That's how we should train ourselves, he said. Train yourself to see what happens in the mind is just a happening in the mind. Remember that perspective. What's happening at the eye in the scene includes this knowing. That constructed form. Sight. Sight is constructed in the mind. What we are experiencing, another way to frame that in the scene is only seen is understand this sight is created by the mind. An object arising, constructed, conditioned, and not a thing. So noticing with sense impressions the various mental functions that come into play. This is a way potentially of exploring what the Buddha is talking about to Bahia. There's a sense impression and this the teaching that Sayadaw Utejaniya offers. What's the relationship? That's kind of exploring the mental formation associated with that sense impression. So that can be that simple too. There's sight and I don't like that sight. That's the relationship. A mental formation arising in connection with the sight. And we talked yesterday about how those mental formations are onward leading, how they tend to continue to shape what happens. And so when they're not seen, they will continue shaping in their habitual way. When they are seen, it can cut that movement of shaping. It's as you know, the way Sayadaw talks about it, like that cognized experience, it's like it becomes recognized as, oh, that's a cognition. That's something that's cognized. That is a phenomenon. So understanding fabrication, we could even just start there. We talked about yesterday. I think that, the seeing, I don't think that this teaching to Bahia is trying to have us stop feeling, perception, thinking. But it's helping us to recognize that they are processes at work in the mind, so that we don't take them to be what they're not, so that we don't take them to be a thing or an I experiencing that thing. While we are alive, perception will continue, feeling will continue, thinking will continue, intention will continue. The understanding of that as processes at work, my understanding is that that can happen without the reification, without the objectification, without the conceptualization, without the I-making and my-making. There's a teaching, which maybe I'll explore a little more in a few days. It's been in my mind in another sutta, several places. The Buddha talks about the word that's used to describe the Buddha, Tathagata, the one that's thus gone sometimes. But Tatha, that first part of the word, sometimes translated as such. The such one, the such like one. And that word, I'm just beginning my kind of looking at this word and what does it actually mean? Different translations for it, but one place a sutta said it means something like just exactly that. So such. Just that. Just exactly that. The experience, kind of this, what this feels like to me as I hold that word with respect to the processes of body and mind unfolding, no object, no thing, is that instead of experiencing things through a sense of self, the Buddha is none other than that. None other than sense, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness. None other than that in the tumbling on. Nothing extra. So in the seen is only the seen, in the heard is only the heard, in the sensed is only the sensed, in the cognized is only the cognized. When that is the experience, when for you, he says to Bahia, when for you in the seen is only the seen, in the heard is only the heard, in the sensed is only the sensed, in the cognized is only the cognized. There is no you in terms of that. Such, just seeing, hearing, sensing, cognizing, such, just that. The processes of the aggregates. Making experience and receiving experience. While we continue in living, that is all. Now, you know, that can sound very kind of bare or drab or something, you know, just like some other words perhaps that might bring some other resonances. Empty. Empty of self and what belongs to self. Empty of greed, aversion, and delusion. The Buddha says to Bahia, this is the end of suffering. It's a little bit of a leap of faith. But every now and then, you might get a taste of just being with experience, flowing through, recognizing, yeah, this is just experience. Even if it's something challenging or difficult, you know, the seeing of a craving or, you know, a confusion. The seeing of it, you get the taste of, oh yeah, it's not a problem. It's just, yeah, it just feels like something happening. It's just like this wave is going through. We get that taste and we know, our system knows when it experiences in that way, that is freedom from suffering. There's no question. Another phrase from another sutta, no perplexity or doubt, just no question, freedom, that is freedom. And then when we're caught back in delusion, we second guess it. Sometimes, you know, we can doubt that seeing. Yet the more that we practice, the more that we get those tastes of freedom, the more that we recognize that doubt as delusion at work. Like, oh yeah, here's delusion, thinking it knows a better way to be happy is to hold on to something. That's delusion. That's the delusion of greed. And we can see that then. We can see it as delusion. We can recognize delusion as something being cognized. That habit or pattern of how I tend to look at things. yep, there's that habit, there's that pattern. And yeah, maybe it's being believed. And so there's the believing. And maybe tasting some of the freedom that comes with the seeing, the meeting of it just as such. Nothing other than processes at work, experiencing what those processes do. Such. And our practice supports this kind of seeing, this kind of meeting of experience. I love the simplicity of this practice. We recognize awareness right there. That's in the cognized, is only the cognized. Awareness is happening. We know what awareness is cognizing, the sense impressions. And the seeing is only the seeing. This whole practice that Sayadaw articulates, this simple form of practice, is a way of supporting us to do what the Buddha was teaching Bahia. And to recognize when there is something going on cognized behind the scenes that we hadn't seen, bring it in so that, oh, that's the attitude. That's what had been shaping how I was attending to experience. But now seeing, it can just be, oh, formation, known as formation. Greed, known as greed. Such a simple articulation of the practice. With actually something a little bit more tangible to do than what the Buddha offered Bahia, in my sense. Yeah, I'm so grateful to this articulation of the practice. So simple. And I'm so delighted to be sharing it with you and hearing your interest and delight in what you're noticing. It's quite, quite lovely. So thank you for being on this journey.